Hello, everyone. Today's episode is going to be following on from last week. So we talked about seam movement last week, and today we are going to talk about conventional swing. Keith and I both love a bit of swing, and I think it's fair to say we sort of carved out our careers through swinging the ball. So it should be a good chat. But firstly, how are you getting on, Keith? You doing all right?
All right, mate. Slowly getting there, back to full fitness, hopefully, touch wood. Had a little bit of a bowl today and a bit of running. You know, as you get older, running gets more difficult anyway, but the fact I've been pain free is quite nice.
Nice. I did a run the other day up and down my road, and it was so slow on Strava, it called it an afternoon walk. won't be sharing that out, to be fair.
So what we're talking swing today. We're talking swing.
Yeah, we got carried away. We had planned, didn't we, last week to talk about movement and every form of movement, but we obviously got rambling about seam, and that took up 45 minutes. So we thought this gave us an opportunity to talk about swing all on its own, which is probably for the best, because I know we're both big fans of swing and moving the ball, right?
Yes. I was fortunate enough to just get the ball to swing when I was young. So I didn't have to like figure much out apart from, as I changed my action, trying to make sure that I still swung it. There's quite a few key things to look for, but I'm interested. I'm going to ask you, what do you look to do when you're trying to swing the ball?
Oh, this is a great question. Well, ultimately, you know what? One of the best bits of advice I've ever gotten is from Pop, who we've had on a previous podcast, right? So that's Graham Welch. And he basically said, if it swings, it swings. So in reality, I don't try and swing it. However, I have set my action up over time to put me in the best position to swing it, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not trying to swing it, but I'm just trying to get everything stacked up technically in a nice way, trying to hit the deck nice and hard, and I'm backing myself to swing it, so to speak. Okay. What about you?
Yeah, I think you're right. When it swings, it swings. But there's certain things that I've worked on. So, for instance, you remember my old action was pretty all over the shop, quite slingy, let's say. I used to get the ball to swing. And when Pop joined Warwickshire, he did say, you know, your wrist position's really good. But I found I swung the ball quite early from the release of my hand. And obviously, we know the later you get the ball to swing, the better. So I had to change a few things technically. But the main thing I had was a good wrist position to actually get the ball to swing. So I think when it swings, it swings. But the later the ball swings, the better. So interesting, you don't try to get the ball to swing. But the fact you actually get the ball to swing, you do get it to swing quite late, which is quick. You catch people out.
I've actually oversimplified, but I think it's important that when you're in a game, that you don't really try to swing it, because quite a few cues or ways people try and swing the ball actually I think makes them worse. So let's take a typical right-handed over the wicket away swing bowler to a right-handed batsman. In an attempt to swing it, they might block themselves off, get a bit side on, bowl around themselves a little bit. And in doing that, you lose pace, you'll lose bounce, potentially you'll undercut the ball. So you won't even get the result you want. Do you see what I mean? So that's what I mean. Having said that, in training and through my, you know, journey going up, there are a few little things that I've tried to do to swing it, which we can obviously... There's a kind of checklist, isn't there? First of all, you've got to grip the ball correctly. And I don't mean a one-size-fits-all. I mean grip it correctly for yourself individually. Then clearly you have to present the seam slightly in the direction you're trying to swing it. Mm-hmm. Then that comes from a good wrist position, which comes from bounding correctly. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like a chain of events. I
think
we're going to touch on those a bit later in the podcast, aren't we? In terms of
Yeah. Yeah. with swing it, it's not just all right, just swing it. If the higher the standard, then you've got to look at where you're swinging it from. You're swinging it because batters, you can become quite predictable to batsmen. So then you've got to try and learn to swing it from different angles on the crease, try and drag batters into doing stuff or changing your lines. So there is a bigger picture to it. But if we start off with that, I'd say start off with a band. I think it's really important from a band perspective. And if we work our way through to then talk about release. A lot of people band, everyone bands differently, but I find it most easy to get my wrist in a good position at release by when I'm banding, actually have my wrist almost presenting the exact same position as I would at release. So as you, like everyone bands differently when the wrists are in different positions, but I tend to get my wrist facing towards the actual batsman. So I know when I actually let go of that ball, my wrist is going to be in a similar position. When we play white ball, what happens, white ball, you just try and slam it down there as fast as you can.
Yes, correct.
And you're not really, you want it to swing, but you know very quickly it's not going to. So you're trying to smash the top of the stumps as hard as you can. I found that playing white ball and coming back to red ball, subconsciously, you forget about things. And I would end up bounding with my wrist pointing like almost a backward point to a right-hander. And at release, I'd almost be in the same position. So I really struggle to get that ball to swing back. So that was my first thing, is make sure when I'm gathering into my band, my wrist is in a solid lock position, because it meant it was just easier for me to let go of that ball in the same position. I don't know about yourself.
Yeah, no, so that's spot on. So obviously I'm looking at you through a camera, and there might, well, hopefully there's loads of people watching this on YouTube. If you're listening, I think what you kind of mean is that if you're looking for the ball to go across a right-hander, this is you as a left-handed bowler, or away, your palm is almost facing down the wicket more in the bound. Whereas if you're trying to swing it, it's almost turned
ever so slightly,
absolutely
right-hander. Yes.
Yes. So yes, no, I completely agree with that. So when I was young, I was lucky enough to go on a Dennis Lilly bowling camp, and the idea was, he was obviously Brett Lee's bowling coach, great bowler himself, and he really pushed the whole Brett Lee technical model. But a couple of things that he said that really stood out, and remembering he's a different generation, but he talked about running in with a slight angle, and running in like you're running 400 meters, right? So you had the thumbs up. Now, this is going to come along. Go on.
For those who can't see, Chris is kind of imitating a great technical running position.
I'm running into bowl right here. So the idea being, if you imagine if you had a ball gripped correctly, yeah, and you're running along,
yeah,
like you're doing a 400, as you, yeah, bound, essentially it's what you're saying. If you bound from that position, you are actually slightly down the side of the ball to help you swing it away to a right-hander. So that was something that stuck with me and resonated with me, which I sort of took into my game, was a slight angle, trying to run in thumbs up. I couldn't even tell you if I do it now, to be honest. But ultimately, I felt that put me, or at least it put the seam ever so slightly into an away swing position for a right-hander. And although it feels much less natural, I would do the same as you. If I want to move the ball across a left-hander or away from a left-hander, ultimately, as I bound, my palm would feel more like it's facing down the pitch.
Yeah.
Sorry if you can hear my dog barking in the background there. I apologize.
Yeah. No, so it's, there's obviously more things to it. I mean, like I said, if you're falling away at the crease, then it does tend to swing earlier, and that's obviously easy for batsmen to pick up. And I found I've become more effective from my wrist being in a good position, but really staying on that line towards the stumps for as long as possible. And then from there, he's never cutting short of my action as I'm releasing that ball. I try and stay on that line. I almost feel like I'm holding onto the ball for as long as possible before letting it go. So like some bowlers you see when they're changing things sometimes, or when they're not really clicking with their action, they're not finishing their action off. And that's one thing I really try and focus on doing, because that can be the difference between the ball going down leg side towards the left under for to him, almost, you know, nicking off from off stump.
Yeah. The finishing off is a really underrated part of bowling generally, I reckon. I reckon there's quite a lot to be gained from finishing well. And certainly if you're trying to swing the ball, in my opinion, you shouldn't be looking to compromise your position at the crease, because if you try too hard to swing it at that point, you can lose too much. I think I just touched on it, you know, pace, bounce, etc. However, at that absolute moment where it's coming off your fingers and beyond there, if you finish off correctly, like long, down the ball, like you say, and then obviously as a right-handed over the wicket bowler, you're going to peel off to the left to get off the wicket. Mm. If you do all of that right, that should only help you take the ball away. Equally, if you want to swing it the other way, then potentially you want to not peel off quite in the same way, right? They're all kind of subtle.
Interesting you said that. So I was going to ask you about that, because I'm going to, if we look at both of us, you bowling right hand, right armer to a right-handed batsman, imagine me bowling left arm to a left-handed batsman, do the exact same, just from different sides of the wicket. If I'm looking to go the opposite way of swinging the ball to a right-hander away from the right-handed batsman, I will probably, if this is what it feels like to me, it may not look like it, but it feels like I actually try and pull away a fraction more to get from a taller release and then almost pull away even more.
Oh, do you? So you sort of shove it?
I'm trying to push that way to get my arm around and my wrist more, almost pushing towards second, third slip, and really force my body out of the way to get that movement.
Yeah, so to be fair, I can believe that. I think, again, this might be then something that's unique to me, which we've talked about in other episodes, is you've got to figure out what works for you. If I do that, I almost come off, I don't get the right side of the ball. So even though I was trying to go away, my wrist position would still, do you know what I mean? It would be for an away swinger kind of thing. So I almost have to try and stay taller and higher for longer.
No, I understand that. I mean, there is a point where if you go too far, the ball comes out and the seam's going all over the shop, and it's not going to shape away from the batsman you're bowling at. But I do find, obviously, that if you can stay taller for longer, you will get some shape, and with that shape, you're going to get a little bit more bounce. But when I'm really like wanting to make sure that ball goes away from the right hander, I am willing to throw myself out there to gauge how much it's going. Because I never want to just try a little bit and it just be a clip ball. I'd rather be a bit more extreme, see how much it goes, and then I can rein it back in. And I might not have to then pull away as much because the ball might do a lot anyway.
This is really interesting, because I think we might be going up a level here in terms of band. In that, I dare say there's an element of that because you're bowling at a right-hander. So when I think about it, if I'm trying to go away from a left-hander, because my angle is slightly different, I feel like in that scenario, I can probably shove it a little bit more because my margin of error gets a little bit bigger.
Okay.
Does that make any sense? Yeah. I don't know if that's... Yeah. I was going to say then that we were talking about really subtle changes, and then you started talking about how you really shove.
Yeah, that's for really going the opposite way. That's for going the opposite way. And that probably could be because I don't feel... I kind of feel that I need to force it more away to a right-hander to make sure they see that ball go away from them. Because it's all about trying to deceive the batsman. So like, all right, yeah, he's going to wait. I don't want them to think, oh, that was something else that it actually wasn't. Oh, yeah, that was just his straight one. No, I didn't want them to think that. I want them to be aware that I will go away from them as well. So I will push it quite hard just so it's the seeds in the head that he's looking to do that, and then I will adapt differently depending on what the game plan is.
Do you have more of a natural way that you swing it? And do you think every bowler has like a natural way? I don't know.
Yeah, loads of blokes. No, they definitely do. I mean, when Kyle Abbott wants to swing it. I watch how he's holding the ball, and he's totally different to me because of how he holds the ball and his release. But yeah, I mean, one thing I was going to say is that I think I'm more consistent swinging the ball from round the wicket away to a right-hander than I am over the wicket swinging it away to a left-hander. And I used to be the total opposite. So I used to be able to swing, get a good line and length over the wicket to a left-handed batsman and be quite accurate. Whereas I feel like because I've learnt the opposite now of coming round the wicket and bowling a lot of wobble and swinging it away from that round the wicket to a right-hander, I've become more consistent in that area. So I'd probably say I'm more confident in round the wicket swinging it away and hitting at a good area with right energy and bounce and whatnot, rather than over the wicket to a left-hander, if that makes any sense. I've gone on for a little bit there.
It's quite an interesting one, podcast to listen to, because we're talking about over, round, away, lefties, righties. So are you saying you don't find it as easy bowling over the wicket at left-handers and nicking him off?
Not
because that's like your bread and butter, isn't it? That was what we used to do. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that was what I used to do. But then when people start to figure you out, you've got to try and level up, haven't you? And there's more right-handed batters that I'm going to come across than are left-handed batsmen. So you kind of end up getting better at a different skill because you're exposing yourself to it more. So, yeah, even today, I bowled at two left-handers and two right-handers today in practice, and I probably went just as much wobble seam to left-handers as I did away swing to the lefties. Whereas around the wicket, I was probably more away swing just to top my skill up because I haven't bowled it in a while. But I felt really, it felt really good coming off the fingers out of my wrist, coming around the wicket to the right-handers. I think that's just over a period of time of bowling more against, like I said, the right-handers than I have left. So I do feel all right, like comfortable against left-handers, but I haven't bowled against that many. So I'm becoming a little bit more inconsistent, or maybe losing the trust and confidence I had. So I will chuck in as probably more wobble seam to left-handers than I have swing. I'll show them I can swing. I've kind of done a bit of an Ollie Hannon Dolby. I'll show you.
Show them a bit of shape and then.
Yeah. But yeah, let's keep this about swing, not wobble.
Okay. All right. So we've sort of talked about wrist position, bound, and finishing off. In terms of the very first thing that you can do as a bowler is grip it correctly.
Yeah.
Do you have any theories with grip in terms of how you can help the ball swing? Because there's probably quite a few different ones. And the answer is there's probably no exact answer because everyone is different.
Well, you say everyone is different. And I'll come back to the release side of it and grip. But I found that a ball that's seam is facing towards first slip, let's say.
Yep.
If that seam is bolt straight, there's no give in the air, it's not wobbling around, yep, shaping that way. If it is bolt upright, swinging towards that first slip, I think that the swing is later and goes a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Whereas when that seam is cantered a little bit, but it's wobbling in the air, there is shape, but it's a little bit more inconsistent. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I feel like the best bowlers out there, you look at your Jimmy Anderson, or even like county level, Dan Worrell, the seam position is spot on and they get the ball to do the most in the air.
Well, you know what? My answer to this would be the beauty of seam bowling is that you have to think a bit less and it's a bit random, right? So the opposite end of that is swing bowling, where you have to do a lot right to get shape, I think. Therefore, when you bowl it, if you're out of control and there is randomness to swing, it makes it extremely difficult to be accurate and bowl well. If you don't know if it's going to swing, or maybe it's going to swing, etc. How do you bowl a line if you don't know how much it's doing?
Yeah.
Therefore, you said about the wobbliness, the slight wobbliness on a swinging delivery. I wouldn't like that as much, because that's going to make, ultimately in the long run, yeah, you might get the odd one that looks like it's going to swing, has a wobble and nips back. Mm. Ultimately, that randomness in the air is going to make your life quite hard, I think.
Yeah.
And that's different from if you're bowling a wobble seam and you're looking to seam it, then in theory, you're going to bowl your line. But in terms of swing, that's where swing gets tricky, isn't it? It's like, what's your starting point and stuff. But I want to come to that in a minute. I want to talk about grip a little bit more, because it's something that I've seen quite a lot, is people trying to swing the ball with their fingers very wide. Now, to me, that's not correct. Because if you have fingers together or closer together, you get a much cleaner release on the seam, I think.
Yeah.
And actually, if you spread them, you do get more of a wobble, which is obviously great for wobble seam, but that's not what we're talking about here.
No, so that's where people do split the seam between their fingers. That's where you do get that wobble in the air. I found and have seen over the years of certain bowlers. And I think, well, what everyone should do, if they aren't already, is just off two steps, bowling in the air to someone else. You can do it with a teammate, and actually almost end up competing of who can get the best seam position trying to swing it. And you know, just get a bit more, try and work on your wrist position and see how it comes out, and then almost then look at how the ball's coming out and adjust your grip from that. That's how I would look to do it, or teach anyone to do it. And I think you're spot on. Fingers down the actual seam makes a huge difference, because you've got something to work with. You've got some grip on that seam to pull down. So it for me, it makes total sense. Just get your fingers down the seam and rip down it and look at the shape of the ball and work in your grip from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that for me, if you were looking to be a pure swing bowler, you would have your fingers quite tight. And then actually, once you had a good gauge of the amount of swing you were getting and all these kind of things, then that's a nice little variation, is just spread them a tiny bit. And actually, you might bowl that magic ball that starts to shape and then doesn't and nips back. You mentioned there about bowling in the air. If that's the one thing that I want to do every warm-up that I do, bowl between 10 and 20 balls in the air into the coach with a mitt on, and just get my seam spot on prior to playing. I'd highly recommend that, because it gets you loose, it gets you kind of checking your action or whatever, and it has not really got too much physical stress on you. Do you know what I mean? So you're not like wasting too many deliveries in a warm-up.
With that, I will say, and I've seen this through a few people that I've been coaching, that when you are doing that kind of exercise where you are bowling into the mitt in the air, you're normally starting that off from maybe you're probably a bit cold, or you may have warmed up, but you know, you're then coming to look at bowling and what are you doing that for? What's the purpose of that actual drill? For me, it is getting everything technically correct, technically right, to make sure then once you're warmed up, you've got that muscle memory of what you've just been doing. The amount of people I see who come and do med ball slams, some band work, getting the shoulders fired up, and then they get the ball, and rather than into the mitt, just taking the time and get a feel for it, they are literally at 85-90% from a walking drill and trying to let it go, and it's scattered everywhere. And it's like, no, your body's warmed up, but it's not warmed up to bowl correctly. Your body's been warmed up now to be active and run around and move and stretch and whatever. But this drill here specifically is to get your wrist and your body doing the right things, and then you build up from there.
Mm. It's almost like you're working on your smoothness, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the med balls are great. You know, they warm you up generally, but when you get that ball in your hand, you know, you might be starting from a bound position, but it's a chance to get your front side working. You know what I mean? And just unpeel your action.
Yes.
Step by step by step. Nice release. And actually, it's funny because you and I both do some coaching. It's not very nice, is it, doing the mitt for someone who doesn't understand that? And they hurl it down at you. Yeah, it's just looking out for shins. Someone who, how good, right? How good is Chris Wokes? Like, absolute gun. But he was never the best at bowling in the air, was he?
Yeah, he was literally like, it could be over your head or a shin. to be fair, I was really good at doing that drill. I always looked after pop quite well. And I found over time, maybe from not doing it as much or just getting older and being a bit more stiff, I'm a little bit up and down sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I need to work on it. I need to get back smooth again.
Fair enough. Right. Okay. So we've talked there about a variety of different things in terms of technical that people can look at. Any cool drills that you can think of that you'd implement to try and practice swing? Or
I think when it comes to, well, this worked for me, and I'm not saying this will work for anyone else, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I did a lot of band work with pop when I was changing my action.
Yeah.
And there was one band in particular where pop would stand behind me with a band under his foot. So it's bang on the floor. I'd have the band in my two fingers as though I was almost trying to hold the seam. And I would work with both arms, kind of getting them to work together. One thing I actually started to do was give a little bit of a slack from the band, but then walking. So I'd be walking away from Pop, who's got the band underneath his foot. I would then be pulling up into my actual gather just from walking through. And that band would be that tight on my wrist position here. I'd have to force it to stay in a good position.
Okay.
And then I would actually pull down into my action. So obviously the band would then slacken and then it would tighten again as I went to pull into my action, if that makes sense.
Yep.
I found doing that for 10, 15 balls really helped my wrist get in a solid position for when I went out and bowled.
Oh, fair play. There you go.
Really,
see,
really, really good for me. And that's something I was, you know, I was talking earlier about transferring from white ball back to red ball. That was a drill I would definitely do to help me get that red ball wrist position back sooner rather than later. The other one is through poles, because you sometimes what you say about white ball falling away. So really trying to work on my action and just drilling, staying up tall, pulling through the poles. That was also something else that worked really well for me.
See, that's the key point. And again, if I circle back to the start, when I was saying about if it swings, it swings, that kind of drill makes you get in a really strong, good position.
Mm.
So rather than trying to swing it, by focusing on a really strong and good position, you will swing it. That's exactly where I was trying to come from earlier. So, yeah, I totally get that. In terms of actually bowling and swinging it, I'm trying to swing it more. I think it's quite nice to practice through to a keeper, or at least beyond it just hitting the back wall of a net, if that makes sense. It's nice to see the path the ball is potentially going on. Maybe that's me being a bit of a psycho and just, you know, but that is one of the nicest things, I think, is to gauge just right. You know, that, yeah, it's carrying on towards the slips or whatever. Sean Pollock mentioned that, didn't he, in his podcast we did with him. He quite liked bowling through just into a keeper or a net, but that was further back.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you can have quite a lot of fun, can't you, in terms of drills with this, like trying to swing it around stumps and back through a tight channel and stuff like that. But
even like sometimes, like, obviously, you've got the ball, you know, you can get the cricket balls that are half white, half red. That's quite a good indication to see what you're actually really doing at release. And if you haven't got that, just tape around the seam, just like a white tape, so you really get to see that seam position to know what you're actually doing. Because you can see it in the air, but I think there's a lot more satisfaction if you can see that seam is not moved off its line towards slip and it's shaped beautifully going through to a keeper. That's a really nice feeling if you're trying to swing it.
I think I'm right here, but by all means, come at me if you're a physicist or something. You will not swing the ball if the seam isn't presented properly. One might randomly swing, but if you're talking about swinging the ball consistently, you need to present that seam the right way, and you need to figure out how you do that. So, like you said there, tape on a ball half and half, or have a mate get their iPhone, stand up a bit higher, and again, you know, video the scene release.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, this is for more of the parents who want the kids to swing it. But there's nothing wrong with an old school tennis ball and a bit of tape around half the ball. And that is a good little drill, little bit of exercise to be able to learn how to get the ball to swing and know how much you want the ball to swing, if you know what I mean.
Mm, great fun. And just pure fun, isn't it? Steaming in with a half and half tennis ball. Yeah, brilliant. Right. Okay, there we go. We've got some stuff. You know what? I've got a book here, actually, which I will probably try. I think it's worth an episode of a book review. There are two chapters in it that touch on bowling particularly, which I'd love to discuss with you. Anyway, this book is called Hitting Against the Spin, right? And there is a chapter in it called Why the Ball Swings. I'm just going to read this little line to show you why you should try and swing the ball as a bowler. It says, top order batsmen in Test cricket average 38.3 against balls that don't swing and just 27.6 against balls that swing significantly. There you go. Bang. There you go. There you go. It's in your interest to swing it. but in terms of pros of swing, like, why do you want to get the ball swinging?
It's so hard to read of how much the ball's going to swing. So, and it happened today when the young lads was batting against me. I was swinging the ball quite a lot, and I've gone to swing this ball like I would do normally, and just a little bit of inconsistency by me at release. He's picked up that this ball's swinging away from him as I presented the scene. But what did the ball not do, Chris?
All right, didn't swing.
Crashes off stump because it didn't swing. but I do think batsmen have to really focus, and you can get them pushing at one they shouldn't do, because that swing just entices them. They see the ball there and think, I can get at that. It just drags them to do something that they shouldn't or that they didn't want to do.
Mm. Yeah. I'm just thinking about this. I don't know if this is going to sound correct, but I actually think if you swing the ball away, so I'm not talking about swinging it in here, swinging the ball away, you actually make your margin of error slightly bigger, I think. Because let's say right-handed away swing bowler at a right-handed batter, if you off stump and wider because of the swing, you will get left a bit and punished less when you miss than someone who doesn't swing it. So let's say a bowler swings it and he misses his six stump, a batter is more likely to leave that than if it's just someone who bowls gun barrel or more of a seamer who gives that width.
Totally agree with you.
That's not necessarily the same for swinging it in, because I think if you miss in that scenario, you kind of leak off the pads. But in terms of swinging it away specifically, the other thing I think about swing bowling, I think it is physically a little bit easier. In terms of, I'm talking about your fitness here and the effort you have to put in, because if you only seen the ball, I feel like every ball has to be bowled ultimately as if it might not seem.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So there's a lot of energy and effort that goes into that, which is absolutely great. However, I think as someone who swings the ball, there are times where potentially it's easier to just to dial it back and kind of,
you can,
I don't want to say cruise, that's the wrong term, right?
I know,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can, you're putting in every ball, but it's almost kind of, if I just keep my shapes and my alignment correct and what I'm doing and let go of the ball with some sort of purpose, there's a little bit more margin for error. Whereas if you are just someone who's hoping the ball does something off the seam, you cannot ever just put it there.
But no. Because, you have to be Carl Abbott.
Yes.
You have to crash.
Yeah. Yes.
Crash your length.
Yes.
Consistently.
Yeah. More almost like your life's on the line every ball when you're trying to get it to move off the wicket. But in the air, you can be a little bit pretty with it. If you know what I mean, you can just get away with bowling within yourself, but with enough shape there, it makes the batsman think about stuff anyway.
This might be wrong. It might be wrong, but I feel like you get more soft dismissals as a swing bowler. like lazy drives where you over pitch, it's a bit wide, it should be four, and they go nick it to third slip, and you're like, oh, yeah. Cheap one. which, you know, people love to think they're perfect all the time. But in reality, you have to factor in that you are going to make errors. Do you know what I mean? Everyone makes mistakes, but if you're swinging the ball, then potentially, even when you do make errors, it does make it a little bit more challenging for batters.
If you look at it, I know you gave that stat out of the book you just read. Mm-hmm. If you've got someone who can hit a good line and length, who can seam it, or someone who can hit a good line and length and swing it, who gets given the new ball?
Great question. With a Duke, I'd say the seamer. With a Kookaburra, I'd say the swing bowler, potentially.
Yeah.
I think so. I think. Maybe I'm looking too much into it. Dave Masters, who I played with at Essex, was always adamant you give the seamers the new ball. Then when the lacquer came off, you'd give the swing, get the swing bowlers on. Someone like we played a lot against, not recently, but back in the day, it was someone like Andre Adams, who bowled first change for knots and would hoop it. Just hoop it around corners and do all sorts of things. He kind of let the lacquer come off. What do you think then?
I don't know. I thought I'm looking at like history of who I've played with and stuff, but it seems that the lads who swing it normally just take the new ball because it's fresh. It's fresh wicket, and it can encourage a new batsman to maybe, like I said, push it when they shouldn't. Realistically, I look here. Abbo can swing it when he wants, if he wants to, but he's someone that will look to crash the seam. I think because I can swing it away to left-handers, there's times when I will open the bowling with more chance than he will, because he's just going to look to move the ball off the deck. So that's interesting. That's interesting. I'm not talking about a seamer who's going to bowl 4 or 5 overs. I'm like someone like ourselves, we're both 7, 8, 9 over spells. So we do get the ball with a lacquer off at some point while we're still bowling.
Well, it's hard. I'm trying to think. Your Hampshire attack is quite it's quite unique, isn't it? It's obviously very, very good. I'm trying to think of a county attack that follows the model.
They go.
You got it. Who does Surrey go with?
They go with Roach, I think, normally on Worrell. I'm pretty sure they do. And then you have like a Jamie Overton and a Gus Atkinson who would follow.
Okay. So that's...
Jamie does swing it, but like a Gus will come on. Gus doesn't open the bowling, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Just bowls rapid.
Yeah.
What does he do? Is he more of a seamer? Just quick seamer?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. But like even at Durham, they have Corse who comes on first change. I don't know if he's looking to nip it around, if he's just looking to bowl as quick as he can.
I think last year he basically just bowled as quick as he could. Rain would probably consider himself more of a seamer, but he's got, you know, he can swing it. Potts, I'd like to get Potts on the podcast, actually. Callum Parkinson told me a few things that Potts has said to him. It'd be quite interesting to chat about. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I think Dave Masters was obviously an exceptional seamer, and he said seamers with a new ball, because obviously the seam was proudest and hardest. And then obviously the lacquer, you can shine a Duke really well. So it didn't necessarily affect the swing bowlers being first change, where it might negatively affect the guys who are out and out seamers. Or he might have just wanted the new ball forever. Minutes of wickets.
That could have been it, yeah.
Apparently, right. Before I joined, 2 years before I joined Essex, Ronnie Irani was the captain at Essex, and he used to take both new balls and then not bowl at any other point. Just go first new ball, quickly then, cons. Are there any cons to swing bowling? Like, what are they? Because there has to be. Well, there are. I just wonder if you have any views.
If the cons, I think the con that comes to mind is if you're just too predictable with your swing. So if you just keep bowling from the same point at the crease, every ball, bowling fifth stump, that's easy. That can get too easy. You have to obviously be testing those stumps, that testing the batter's defence as much as you can. So that's where I'd see it as being predictable. Or I find being predictable, this is why I changed to try and do something else. Of once people understood that our left arm are coming over the wicket, swinging it back to right-handers, they adjusted to that. And I found it boring and kind of predictable, that I could have looked to trying to come tighter to the stumps or wider, but I then thought, not coming round the wicket worked well for me, and swinging it away from right-handers or wobbling it.
Good point.
Not many. I don't know. Have you got many cons yourself?
I think this is that's you've made a really good point. Is that a lot of batters now? You have to take what batters say with a little pinch of salt, because they always like to try and make themselves appear brilliant, because that's just what they do. But they will sometimes say it's easier to track the ball if it's swinging than when it seems, and that's totally understandable. So yeah, like you've said there, if you're a bit predictable, good batsmen can line up the swing. In fact, I remember a few years ago, actually, I remember ringing you up and saying, I've just bowled really well against Sam Robson at Middlesex. And I was like, it came out brilliantly. I was moving it, but he got like 70 or something. Mm. And I came off and I was like, what's gone on there? And you were like, you got to mix it up more. Which, again, goes against conventional chat, which is bowl the same ball over and over, be boring, be relentless, keep it simple. But you were like, you need to mix it up a bit more, bowl more wobbles, more innings, and then he can't line me up, kind of thing.
Yeah
and it worked, didn't it? I remember it worked.
He's someone, like, so he, once he's in, you need to keep, like, he can line someone up. He's done it to me many a time before. And that's where you have to change things up a little bit. I'll tell you what I've actually started to do. This is only in practice, and I've done this once in a game. I've come round the wicket to left-handers of trying to nick them off, because you get some batsmen that come quite open face bat and try and put, like, kind of come across themselves. And I think sometimes I've become predictable from over the wicket, and I've been saying, Vincey, I want to come round. He's like, no. And I just know if I get that ball on the right line, middle and leg, with a ball swinging away from a batsman who is predominantly leg side, or the face of the bat likes to come across themselves. Mm. That's not an easy ball to face. So it's a bit rogue, but it's different ways of trying to get the ball to swing from a different angle.
Yeah, I think because you can rely on your ability, and you've got so much volume of swing bowling, you could probably muck about with stuff like that, couldn't you? I wouldn't recommend that for, like, younger players who are just kind of coming in. It's
figuring it out.
So the point there about being lined up is a con, because you have to mitigate that. The other one is, let's be honest, it's harder. It's not physically harder. Skill-wise, it's harder. You have to do a lot more things correctly to swing the ball. And equally, even then, there is that element of the unknown. It may not swing as much as you think, or it might swing more too much, which is not the case if you just bowl seam and you just bowl wobble seam.
Here's another con, is if you're bowling against the breeze, that's tough. That's where it's like, right, how do I get my line right? Because you could have someone who is a bit of a nick-off batsman, but when the conditions don't suit you, it's kind of fighting against your surroundings to try and still get the ball to do something. I think that's a bit of a con. I think that's just tough to do.
Now, let's be honest, there's always going to be, let's say you have an attack of four seamers, there's always going to be two bowlers bowling from the end that is harder.
Yeah.
And if they're trying to swing the ball where you've got to get a lot right and you've got a gusty breeze into you, That makes it way harder than if you're just trying to bowl a wobble seam. No, it's spot on. This has been an interesting podcast, because there's so many little avenues. So, for instance, I think bowling swing downhill is harder than bowling uphill.
Oh, let me think about that. Go on. I feel like you're right, but go on.
All right. Okay. The reason is, in my opinion, and I'm basing this mainly off of Grace Road, but Headingley to a degree and Hove, is that because you're downhill, you need to concentrate on kind of feeling like you've got a good base. So you need to kind of slam into the floor almost. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? To get your timing right.
Yeah.
If you're trying to swing it and you haven't felt like you're in that position, I think it can play with your wrist, and you can almost leave your wrist behind a fraction. So you might think you're going to swing it, but actually you're not quite in the right position. And then you kind of potentially leak straight, is my theory. So I think downhill, you're better off operating slightly more as a seamer. But then up the hill, the opposite happens. You actually get in a great position and you get a good strong base, and you can. Although, again, it's physically harder. I don't know that you'd want to bowl up every hill that you ever came across, but
no. But I'd agree. But yeah, because coming down the slope, you've got to dig it in harder to pitch.
Absolutely. So then
you almost do end up hitting the deck a little bit like a seamer.
Mm.
Whereas uphill, you were able to present yourself and almost feel like you have to push it up a little bit more to get the swing.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. Yeah.
Okay, in terms of how long have you got left, Keith? I'm aware you've got to do a school run, haven't you?
Yeah, that was probably about 10 minutes ago.
Have you got another 5 minutes?
I've got another few minutes, yeah.
Okay, if you need to jump off, you can jump off and we can try me just rambling if you want.
Basically,
conditions that help swing. And I think it's definitely worth me doing a little book review because it talks about the type of air. But fundamentally, we're looking for overcast, aren't we? Cool, slightly cool, moist conditions. Is that fair?
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, I think a lot of it has to do with the actual wicket, because it also becomes about who you're bowling with as well. But if the wicket's a little bit abrasive, you can have decent conditions, but amount of times where the ball's been lovely, but someone hits the ball into the wicket quite hard, and that can really affect the ball. And depending on how good the person who shines your ball is at getting that shine back, you can be then battling against it. But overheads, yeah, a little bit cooler, a touch of moisture in the air. Overheads, if you can't swing it then you've got to look at what you're doing within yourself to try and get it right.
Right. You know what? This is teed up beautifully for me to do a book review with yourself, because these points touch on it. And it's actually to do with the type of airflow.
Okay.
And what you've just said is like, it's all correct in like layman's terms. You know what I mean? In its simplest terms, you're bang on. However, the reason is, for example, is the type of airflow you need. It can't be achieved if the ball is abrasive because it's been hit into the square. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we'll save that for another episode.
That'd be pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good. And plus, you can be quite chilled. I'll highlight it. I'll read the points to you, and you can pick it apart.
I doubt I'll pick that apart, but yeah, that'd be decent, mate.
To be fair, I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll enjoy it. Right. Well, I think we've done pretty well there. There's quite a lot to pick out for people on swing. So before we go, don't forget that this episode is brought to you by Gray Nichols.
Now, Gray Nichols, as I've said before, really, really good bat company. The way the bats pick up, I think people are quite surprised at how light the bat feels in your hand. And even though they can be a little bit heavy when you put them on the weighing scales, the way they pick up and the way they swing, it feels like you're holding something half that weight. Definitely worth having a look at, and definitely worth ordering. I'm getting quite a few people asking me for help on getting a bat, and I have to keep putting them through towards the Bowlers Union code. So, you know, Chris is going to tell you what you need to do. And
yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, it's across the bottom. The code is they're all capitals, but A_TBUP20. And obviously, graynichols.co.uk. And you can put that in and enjoy a nice discount on us and Gray Nichols. Right, Keith, anything else before we wrap it up?
No, mate, that's me.
Perfect. Well, in that case, I will let you go and do your school run. Try not to make anyone sick in the car. Right. Take it easy, Keith. Thanks for listening, everyone.